In 1867, George Eliot started a poem this way: "Oh, may I join the choir invisible of those immortal dead who live again in minds made better by their presence."
Oh, may I join that invisible choir.
Now with some bluesy Dixieland, Chris Delmhorst has turned that into a song.
I want to join that invisible choir made of the sweet immortal voices that lift this world up high.
On Chris Delmhorst's latest CD, each song comes from a poem, from Lord Byron to Edna St. Vincent Millay. Some she takes verbatim and sets to music. For others, she works from the essence of a phrase and turns the poem into something else entirely. She got the idea after reading Robert Browning's A Toccata of Galuppi's. It's Browning's tribute to a Venetian composer.
So he wrote this poem about listening to someone play a piece of this guy's music and the way that it brought Venice to life for him, and he could sort of see the whole masked, you know, dances that were going on all night, and all these, it was sort of Venice in his heyday, and so it makes him feel old, and he thinks about all those people and how they've been dead for so long, and he sort of takes the gloomy turn. But when I read it, it seemed to me like what it really was a description of the odd little immortality that art gives people, because, you know, he in the 19th century was writing about it, and then I in the 21st century was sitting in my living room and picturing it too. And so, you know, I don't know how much more immortal you could hope to be than that. So I thought it was a pretty cheerful poem, and he thought it was about death, and so I sort of decided to make my own take on it.
And you've got a pretty cheery melody.
Definitely. Yeah.
Why don't you play a little bit of it for
sure.
Us?
Well, the first line of his poem is, "Oh, Galuppi Baldassare, this is very sad to find." I just feel like that, you almost just want to sing it, you know, right there. So I changed the words, but I came up with, "Oh, Galuppi Baldassare, though I never knew your name. It's thanks to Mr. Browning you are with us just the same. Thanks to Mr. Browning blowing on the flame. Well, here you come with your old music, and here's all the good it brings. You say they lived like this in Venice when the merchants were the kings. And though I never left old Boston, still you showed me everything." It goes on like that.
Boston, not in the original version.
Nope, definitely not.
There's a great thing that happens here, because he actually has a verse talking all about chord changes.
Yeah.
What more could you ask
amazing.
For?
I know. It's like he wrote the song for me right there. Yeah, he talks about those minor thirds, so lesser thirds so plaintive, sixth diminished, sigh on sigh, told them something, those suspensions, those solutions, must we die? Those commiserating sevenths, life might last, we can but try. So, yeah, I pretty much just took those chord changes. I changed a couple of them, because you have to eventually make the decisions that make it a better song. But on the minor third so bitter, six chord like a sigh, suspension, solution, asking must we die, must we die, must we die. When the seventh says, "Well, fellas, life might not last, but we can try." So were you happy? I was happy. You're still happy, yes, and you. The more kisses, why'd we stop them? When a million seems so few, there's something in that music. Lord, it must be answered to.
When you're taking a poem and changing it a lot, like you do with this one, and really flipping the meaning around, do you stop and think, you know, what will people who really care about Robert Browning think?
Yeah.
Do I feel good about this?
I did. I had a little moment of thinking about it. And when I first started writing it, it really was just for fun, so I wasn't thinking about it too much. Then once I realized I was going to make this record, some of the poems, I stayed really true to them, and some of them I changed quite a bit. And this one, I mean, not only did I modernize the language, but I also really did change the meaning of it. And so, yeah, I hesitated. But I just decided to not be too careful with them and not be too precious about them. I mean, they're not hidden gems. You know, they're all pretty well-known works of poetry, and they have their own life, and it's not, I don't feel like they're really threatened. And there's probably some people that will be bothered by it, but I don't think too many, so.
Yeah. There's a whole range of musical styles here. I mean, there's some sort of Dixieland, bluesy mm-hmm. stuff going on and some pretty straight-ahead folk. Yeah. When you did the E.E. Cummings poem, mm-hmm. Anyone Lived in a Pretty How Town, yeah. How did you figure out that you wanted that to be sort of a, I would call it, I guess, a country western shuffle almost?
Women and men, both little and small, cared for anyone, not at all.
So it's hard to describe, but a lot of these songs, I really just let them fall out. Whatever was the music that really felt like it was gravitating towards, I just really let it be that, and I didn't question it much because there's so much going on in the lyrics of these songs, and I really wanted the music to be fun, you know, and companionable. And so this one, this was the first idea I had for it. It was just this sort of semi-crazed little sort of bluegrass, you know, feeling, and it just seemed right. He's so, I mean, I love E.E. Cummings. There's always that level on which his poems are so silly, you know, and then there's lots of other levels where they're really deep, and so it just felt right to have music that was just slightly goofy and really fun. It's a really fun one to play.
One day anyone died, I guess, and no one stood to kiss his face. Busy folk buried them side by side, little by little, and words by words, and all by all, and deep by deep, more by more, they dream their sleep. No one in anyone earth by April, with lips afloat, many bells down.
I don't know that E.E. Cummings would have imagined people two-stepping to one of his poems.
I don't know either. This was actually the only one that I really really thought long and hard about, because I made some of the lines rhyme that didn't rhyme in the initial poem, and I love the way they don't rhyme. I left some of them, but some of them just felt really awkward, and so I made them rhyme, and I'm not sure that E.E. actually would approve of that.
The Cummings people are going to be coming after
yeah,
you.
Yeah, they might.
Do you find yourself, if you're reading poems now, are you sort of automatically thinking about melody and instrumentation and turning them into songs?
Well, not really. You know, it's funny. I think poems that I already have a relationship with, I don't really have the desire to mess with them at all. I mean, they sort of exist fully already. They kind of take up their own space in my mind. And so, I don't know, a few things every now and then. I've come across a few things and thought, oh, that would have been really fun to do. So, who knows, maybe I'll do a volume two someday.
Chris Delmhorst, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much, Melissa.
My brave soul, if they're all the seas of heaven, why should we not go where all maps fail?
This is Chris Delmhorst's version of Walt Whitman's poem Passage to India. You can hear her talk about the challenge of adapting that poem and hear more songs from the CD Strange Conversation at our website, npr.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.